ashes for a third glorious decade of total law enforcement.
How long have you known the plaintiff?
I haven't actually seen it, but I have seen the firm, and I'm planning on renting the Pelican Booth.
I must declare a mistrial, which is a term I've heard people use in the movies. Tap, tap, tap. Case ended.
I got the shotgun. Got the briefcase. It's on the game, though, right?
Judge gave me two ankle bracelets. Said it was the first time he ever had to do that. Your boy's a question on the bar exam. You heard?
Welcome to Opening Arguments, a podcast that pairs a comedian with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 527. I'm Thomas, and that is Andrew announcing his new OnlyFans account. How are you doing, Andrew?
I am fantastic. You know, you got to look, I'm looking for every possible way to monetize.
In this economy.
Yeah, the assets that I bring to the table here.
Andrew's OnlyFans. Yes, I'm so glad. You are an OnlyFan, I understand.
I used to live in Olney, Maryland. And prior to last week, the only bit of distinction on that was that if you played Fallout, right? Any of the like Bethesda Softworks games, right? Bethesda is another city in Montgomery County, Maryland. So... I think the death claws were from Olney, and they would have, you know, actual geographic reference to places that I found familiar, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, slightly familiar for something else. So we'll get to go through it.
This is a thing that you may have seen on the internet, OnlyFans. I can't wait for the breakdown. It's going to be so much fun. Let's see. Any other news? I guess, again, a lot of awful movies for our fine patrons. Check that out. It was a ton of fun. And anything else? Should we get going?
No, let's get going.
He who questions training only trains himself at asking questions.
What?
Okay, first up, though, listener comments. Oh, yeah, we heard from somebody. This is interesting. Why don't you tell us who we heard from in our email inbox?
Yeah, we heard from and now follow Ohio Intel Tips on Twitter because we got this email. Ohio Intel Terp says, I recently came across your podcast that discussed Tor Maris, right? In your first podcast, 452, you mentioned not knowing how Maris was unmasked as the expert witness from her redacted affidavit, right? And we talked about how, you know, Spider, they filed it as affidavit of Joshua Merritt in the court system, so you could actually see the file name. Here, this was affidavits, you know, whatever. There was no such error. Anyway, back to the email. It was me. As soon as I saw the affidavit, I knew it was from her. Her writing style is too distinctive to go unrecognized, but also much of that affidavit was copied and pasted from an article, quote unquote, she wrote for her website in 2019. I was also the initial source for the Washington Post article on her in December 2020. I've been tracking Tor a long time. Other researchers have been at it much longer. She has a very lengthy history of fraud and other criminal activities. In essence, we've never been able to verify that she has ever held an actual legitimate job. She used to go on podcasts as a guest claiming to be a medical doctor.
Oh, my God.
She was banned by various podcasters once they figured out she was lying. Then she switched to claiming she was a career intelligence officer and contractor who was involved in, of course, all sorts of classified missions and programs. She even claimed to be the person who hacked the DNC and RNC servers.
Yeah, definitely.
According to Ohio Intel Tips, and I should add, we engaged in journalistic efforts to verify these claims. Right?
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are, I have seen screenshots of communications between this individual and the Washington Post.
Wow.
I find that credible, right? Like this, you know, if we're being hoaxed, we're being hoaxed. This is an awfully good one. I find it pretty credible. So they continue. She was kicked out of the Navy after only 8 months following her arrest for check fraud and theft, which we've covered on the show. She moved to Ohio in 2020 and filed numerous lawsuits against local school boards in an attempt to stop mask mandates for students. Just this past week has filed a writ of mandamus against Governor DeWine regarding masking and vaccination. There is literally too much information about Tor out there exposing her scams and lies. Somehow she maintains a very large following, makes a lot of money from her supporters. Yeah, we saw Morgan Stringer found that they were trying to crowdfund a like, you know, six-figure sports car for her birthday, which, you know, again, wow. My birthday is October 7th, so.
Wasn't she the one, I don't want to be mixing up my nut jobs here, but wasn't she the one who blew all that money on like waxes or something? Remember
yes.
That?
Yeah. Yeah. It was all on bikini waxes and trips to Target. It right. was fantastic. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. She was present at the January 6th, 2021 Capitol riot and tweeted encouragement to those breaking into the building. That, again, we can verify. So super cool. There's folks out there doing parallel work. And believe me, this is somebody who is has been in on the grift and is trying to graduate to the, you know, Sidney Powell level. So
oh, wow.
I'm glad there's somebody out there tracking what Terpsichore is doing. Yeah. And thank you so much, Ohio Intel Tips. And we do now follow them on Twitter. They've got good stuff.
Yeah, no, so cool to hear from. Yeah, it sounds like a real sleuth, you know, someone who's doing that research work and all that. So thanks so much for writing in. And still haven't heard back from my our one NFL listener that I assume exists. haven't heard back yet. Our inbox is open. Open arguments. That's openarguments@gmail.com. Whoever's.
Yeah.
And doesn't have to be just one. If there's any other NFL players, coaching staff, I'll take coaching staff, but like a coach that I would have heard of, not, you know. If you're just behind
but
the scenes.
Like a coach that I yeah. would have heard of. I love
yeah,
that.
Like head coach or, you know, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, somebody I'm going to see on the sidelines or okay. or maybe in the skybox. I'll take that.
Got it.
Maybe I'm getting too picky. Maybe beggars can't be choosers.
Well, you know who we did hear a lot from was we put out a call to our transmasculine listeners. And I want to read three of the comments that we got. And I am doing this because in my research and from what, you know, trans men have said to me, the biggest thing that they are concerned of is sort of trans male erasure, right? That's why inclusive language is important. I've done a little bit of research. I'm going to talk about that at the end. So I'm going to read the comments and kind of add their voices to the discussion. I really appreciate that. And hopefully we're amplifying some of those voices. So Tobias Girl writes, "It's exhausting being caught in the crossfire as a trans man. We're just as impacted by the law as cis women, but pro-choicers don't always want us around because we complicate their slogans. Mm. You described the complexity of the situation with grace and nuance, and that lessens the burden we have to bear, if only by a little.
Aww.
The one thing I'll add is that from an anti-choice perspective, we're very much included in their war on women because forcing us to pretend we're not who we are is one of their goals. They view us as women, whether it's true or not."
Oh,
and then Nick expands on that a little bit. He says, "From my perspective as a transmasculine person, the point I'd add to this discussion is there's not really much of a distinction to Republicans between the war on women and the war on trans, or really most LGBTQ plus people that were assigned female at birth, people specifically, because Republicans don't think trans people really exist, and so view anyone with a uterus slash the capacity to get pregnant as really a woman that is in need of controlling back to standard gender norms. There's generally a hyper-invisibility that applies to transmasculine people, especially once we pass reliably, but the women light impression is very strong, particularly for those early in transition that present more femininely or just don't pass as male very well for whatever reason. How this war on women can end up presenting on transmasculine people then is basically a war on the parts of a person perceived as woman, which may lessen and become less visible over time, but can still exist, which is very bioessentialist and reductive to a person's humanity and sucks, but that is rather the point by these politicians. Basically, my point is that the war on women and the war on trans queer people both stem from the same enforcement of gender roles, and both can be seen in the current overlap and history of the language around the queer community. And then our good friend Stormy Decisis chimed in, and I really liked this. I enjoyed all of the emails. So Stormy says, I see parallels with the Sikh community. Sikhs aren't Muslims, but assholes think they are. Sikhs in the U.S. are victims of discrimination and harassment, the motive is almost always misplaced Islamophobia. In both cases, a tiny minority community is being assaulted by ignorant buffoons who wrongly think that that tiny minority is part of a larger, also disempowered group. Islamophobes think Sikhs are Muslim. The people who wrote this law think all people with uteruses are women and all women are 3D printers. In both cases, the assailant's motive is worth highlighting. I have enormous respects for Sikhs for not throwing Muslims under the bus. At any time, they could have bought a few billboards saying, we're not Muslims, stop harassing us, but they didn't. They dug in and they fought Islamophobia, even though it wasn't their fight. In the same vein, anti-abortion people mostly think I'm a woman and denigrate me for that. All of this is a long way of saying, I think a mixed approach is called for. Attacks on abortion are misogynist and should be called out as such. That means at least some discussion of abortion as a women's issue. At the same time, it's worthwhile to remind listeners that some of the people affected by this law are not women. I don't know what the right ratio is, but I have confidence that you'll find a reasonable split. So, well, thank you for all of that. And I will pass on, when I was reading, I was struck by the writing of Alexander Petrovnia, and he wrote a blog called Women Aren't the Only Ones Who Need Women's Health. And it discusses some of the horrifying consequences of trans erasure, including, and I don't want to get into the details, but skip it 30 seconds if you don't want to hear any of it, a pregnant trans man who had to go to the emergency room and was improperly triaged at the hospital because the nurse tagged him as obese rather than pregnant.
Oh, wow.
And delivered a stillborn child. So I thought it was a moving story for me, and that's what I found. So again, what I take away is, you know, as somebody who does an awful lot of talking, I am trying to listen on this. So thank you for sharing your voices with us.
Always interesting to hear more perspectives, and we've got the best listeners. I love it's so fun the number of people that write in and are just they're so fascinating and thoughtful. I love it, so thank you for that.
Down. Down.
And now for our main segment, it's Andrew's OnlyFans. Can't wait. How do we subscribe? What are the perks? What are the first few choice photos you have up?
Yeah, so this story, you know, hit the rounds last week. And so full disclosure, not only did I used to live in Olney, my son played baseball. In Olney.
Oh, wow.
First for the Olney Boys and Girls Club, and then later with some travel ball, the team that is affiliated with both parties here is a team called Koa Sports, and they had invited him to be a part of their 12U travel team the year we moved out, right? Like literally right before we had to move out and find a different team. So yeah, so this is about Olney. It's about the law. It's about baseball. Like how perfect is that?
Yeah.
And I just had to dig into it. So it starts with an online humor publication called The Tacoma Torch. Designated as a nuclear-free zone, it's kind of an old line hippie community, right?
Yeah,
and it's on the metro, and I used to live there when I was going to college when I went to GW. And so that is, I had not heard of the Tacoma Torch before that, but I think okay, and the you know, if the editor is listens to this show and wants to reach out and correct my view, I've read a couple of articles on there, and I think the idea is. he's sort of a new liberal leftist, and he's kind of sometimes pokes fun at the kind of classical 60s hippie liberalism of Tacoma Park, right? So I know that he's a fellow traveler, right? Because one of the September 1st post on the Tacoma Torch was nation shocked that the Supreme Court did exactly what they've been promising for decades, right? And this is pretty good. So, like, Americans woke up Tuesday morning in a state of shock after discovering that the Supreme Court, with a clear majority of reactionary religious conservatives who were only confirmed for their definitive anti-abortion views, had decided to allow Texas Republicans to make good on a 40-year promise to strip half the state's population of any autonomy over their own bodies. I just can't believe this is happening, said Luke Halpern, a political commentator on CNN. I mean, this is what literally every single women's rights organizer in the nation has been warning us about since 1973, but still, to be blindsided by this, by a Supreme Court with a solid 6-3 hyper-conservative majority is just shocking. Right? Yeah. So, okay. So that's where the Tacoma Torch is coming from. Fellow travelers on the left, parody news site. And what set off the dispute was they posted a satirical article about Olney, which, again, if I haven't made this clear, is kind of the seat of youth baseball, at least in Montgomery County. But I would say, you know, it's where the best baseball in the state gets played. But part of that is because my son used to play there. So
yeah.
And they are bringing in a Cal Ripken League baseball team into the state. And that is a collegiate level independent baseball team.
Oh, it's not just clones of Cal Ripken. They play each other.
No, like that would be amazing.
Cal Ripken clones.
Well, do I send up Ripken here or
do I do? Yeah. Well, this Ripken is left-handed Ripken. There's a certain number of them, you know, the clones.
It'll be like Multiplicity. Like some of the clones are, you know, bad copies of the original. Yeah. So they posted an article that was entitled OnlyFans website for Montgomery County's new baseball team crashes due to unusually high traffic. You know, so the through line is, we knew that starting a new baseball team in Olney would be popular, especially with males between the ages of 13 and 55, said marketing director Brock Jacobs. But when our site registration exceeded the entire population of Maryland, after announcing a free footlong on opening day against the Bethesda Big Train, we realized our huge oversight. Now, that's only an extra layer of funny if you know that the Bethesda Big Train is, in fact, a real travel team.
Oh, my gosh. That's
100%
awesome.
Real travel team in the state of Maryland. I thought
they had to make that up. That's fantastic.
You know, that's good. Only administrators soon confronted a new problem on the OnlyFans user forum, where posters can discuss opinions on the team, the players, and other baseball-related topics. Moderators have been working overtime to filter inappropriate content, but have yet to determine if phrases such as getting stuffed with the backdoor slider and making your knees buckle with the split finger should be removed. All right. So, all in good fun.
This is just an onion wannabe, right? But it sounds like they're a very good onion wannabe. Yeah. It's
an onion wannabe. That's September 8th. On September 9, via email, comes in a cease and desist letter from Andrew L. Schwartz of the firm Stein Sperling, with whom I have litigated several cases.
So, in other words, the fun police.
Yeah.
Fun police sent a letter saying, stop having fun.
Sent a letter that says, this firm represents the Olney community baseball team. Please direct all communications directly to my attention. Olney Baseball has learned that the Tacoma Torch has circulated communications that use the name, image, or likeness of Olney Baseball in a false, misleading, and or defamatory manner. And then it cites the article. And then it says, no one from or on behalf of Olney Baseball was contacted, interviewed, or consulted about the article. It contains numerous false and misleading statements. For example, Olney Baseball, one, does not have a website. Two, the individuals purportedly quoted in the article have no relationship with Olney Baseball and are not in any way affiliated with Olney Baseball. Three, the individuals quoted in the article have no authority to comment on or speak on behalf of Olney Baseball. Right. And four, this is the best part, the article references a purported logo for Olney Baseball. However, Olney Baseball does not have any logo at this time. And again, that's the joke.
And logo?
By the way, the logo is We'll make it the show note
graphic. Oh, yeah.
It is. It's the OnlyFans logo with only replaced with only. Mm-hmm. And inside the O is a little. Is a blue baseball bat sticking straight up, flanked by two baseballs. It's pretty funny, right? It is obviously 5 minutes of work with Photoshop, right? Like, it is not this. You could not possibly mistake this for anything other than a joke, right? There's not enough effort.
I thought we lived in America only. Come on, satire. You know, like, I feel like we're usually pretty protected by the First Amendment. Am I wrong?
No, you are not wrong. That led to, and the only reason that I'm covering this, which is the Tacoma Torch's response dated September 12 to the lawyer that wrote this letter, which I will now read in full. I've only been quoting from parts before, but this is too good. This is better. This is their best writing, I think. Mr. Schwartz. Thank you for your recent submission of a satirical legal threat. Even though our writing team found it to be extremely hilarious, unfortunately, it does not technically meet our qualifications of containing fewer than 300 words
Legends.
And having a punchy headline.
Oh.
So we will not accept it at this time.
Oh, fantastic. This is a very talented team.
Perhaps you could have used only makes history with first baseball team to lack a sense of humor, or even... Lawyer has balls to make baseless claims against satirical baseball story. Either of these headlines would have been acceptable. The Tacoma Torch would also like to take this time to express our sincere regret that your client does not yet have a team logo. The good news is we're willing to sell our custom OnlyFans logo at a special discount of only $5,000. We're currently using it to sell shirts to raise money for the Only Boys and Girls Club, unless we continue to receive baseless legal accusations, causing us to redirect those funds to defending our First Amendment rights as satirical writers. We're sure nobody wants that kind of bad press.
Oh, wow.
Finally, while we appreciate you essentially giving yourself to us by closing with Very Truly Yours, as a lawyer, you should know that the Civil War amendments prohibit that sort of thing. See U.S. Constitution Amendment 13, Section 1. Sincerely, the Tacoma Torch. And then, if you were not all in yet, CC Barbara Streisand.
Oh, wow.
That's
top-notch.
That is a genius level response.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about the actual legal principles that are at stake here, because everything I have been able to find, including an article in the Washingtonian that covers this, seems to indicate that the lawyer is not going to just, you know, kind of put your tail between your legs and walk away, right? That by the way, is the right call at this point in time,
yeah.
Right? Like when you get owned by a non-lawyer over your cease and desist letter, maybe stop digging. Otherwise, this is how you wind up with a 12-minute musical montage about you on the John Oliver show. But let's kind of go through this. We've talked about this before. Hustler Magazine versus Falwell is often cited for the principle that satire can't be defamation. It's actually a little more nuanced than that. And I went in kind of figuring it out to try and figure out the contours of what was important to the courts in those cases, right? And so I went and I actually read the appellate court opinion, which ruled in favor of Jerry Falwell on some of the causes of action, right? And quotes at length, God, if I could find this would be, there's no way that this is available online. But Jerry Falwell's lawyers took a deposition of Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler Magazine, in June of 1984. It was apparently a video deposition. Would love to see either of those. So, During that deposition, Flint used multiple aliases. He testified that the ad. Oh, I should take a step back. We're saying Hustler Magazine versus Falwell. We have discussed this on the show on multiple occasions, but just as a refresher, this was a parody ad for Campari that ran in the pages of Hustler Magazine at the time. Campari, by the way, is a delightful bitter alcohol that is used in Negronis. That's how I use it. But at the time, in the 80s, they were trying to push like Campari and soda as like an elegant drink for women, right? Mm. And so they had this massive ad campaign going, and the ad campaign was Campari talks to X about their first time.
Right. Yeah. You've told the story a lot of times, but that's okay.
Yep. We get new listeners.
True.
And so, you know, they would interview various celebrities about their first time drinking Campari. And the Hustler magazine parody of that was Campari talks to Jerry Falwell about his first time actually being, right? Because this was the mid 80s. So, you know, the ones that ran in Newsweek were, you know, Three's Company level of subtle, you know, like, well, my first time was, you know, at the country club or, you know, and you were supposed to titter going, oh, gosh. The Hustler, you know, had very little qualms.
They didn't have the talent of a Tacoma Torch.
No, but you know, so their interview suggested that Jerry Falwell's first time was with his mother in an outhouse after they had kicked out the goat. And then I love that Larry Flint was asked about writing and running the ad. And these are real questions asked in the deposition, quoted in an appeals court. Question, did you want to upset Reverend Falwell? Answer, yes. Question, do you recognize that in having published what you did in this ad, you were attempting to convey to the people who read it that Reverend Falwell was just as you characterized him, a liar? Answer, he's a glutton. Question, how about a liar? Answer, yeah, he's a liar too. Question, how about a hypocrite? Answer, yeah. Question, that's what you wanted to convey? Answer, yeah. Question, and didn't it occur to you that if it wasn't true, you were attacking a man and his profession? Answer, yes. Question, did you appreciate at the time that you wrote okay and approved this publication as for Reverend Falwell to function in his livelihood and in his commitment and career, he has to have an integrity that people believe in? Did you not appreciate that? Answer, yeah. Question, and wasn't one of your objectives to destroy that integrity, to harm it if you could? Answer, to assassinate it. So I love that, and I love that, right, that's the evidence at trial, that's the evidence from deposition. And what it goes to show is not just the principle that parody or satire is protected by the First Amendment, but that in fact it applies to other torts. It can apply to the intentional infliction of emotional distress claim that was the subject of that lawsuit. It could also apply even to statutory claims like copyright claims, right? Because again, what the court is doing is, you might say, as a part of our continuing arguments against originalism, right? It is construing the First Amendment broadly and liberally. Nowhere in the First Amendment does it say you have a right to parody other people's stuff. But we have a long and rich history in this country of allowing people to do so. And that free expression trumps even long-established state common law torts, state statutory torts, federal statutory law in a way that I think is impossible for originalists to defend. The copyright case is really interesting. Thomas, you're right. As a creature of the 90s, you missed out, I think, on Two Live Crew, right?
Really know it.
Yeah, Two Live Crew is a rap group led by Luther Campbell, Luke Skywalker with two Y's. Their breakthrough hit was a song called Me So Horny, and their album was called As Nasty As They Wanna Be, and it was a backlash to the standards and practices of the 1980s. Me So Horny is every bit as offensive as you could possibly imagine in terms of racial and gender stereotypes, and, you know, was their biggest hit. In any event, they also did a satire / parody of Roy Orbison's Pretty Woman. Their goal was to say, these lyrics are so simplistic, so what we want to do is replace them with offensive and shocking and unexpected lyrics. Now, you could argue to what degree they succeeded in doing so. I am not going to quote from the lyrics of the songs. You can Google that yourselves. But it was essentially Pretty Woman and then some other stuff layered on top of it.
So kind of like Weird Al sort of-esque, right? I mean, you're just changing lyrics.
Exactly right. And in fact, this leads to the basis of the rules that govern Weird Al. This case is called Campbell versus Acuff Rose Music, 510 U.S. 569. And it discusses to what degree parody insulates you from copyright liability, right? And it goes through the fact that parody can claim legitimacy for some appropriation does not, of course, tell either the parodist or the judge much about where to draw the line. And it goes through and tries to figure out, like, is this a good parody or a bad one? So it says here, the district court held and the court of appeals assumed that Two Live Crew's Pretty Woman contains parody, commenting on and criticizing the original work, whatever it may have to say about society at large. As the district court remarked, the words of Two Live Crew song occupy the original's first line, but then, quote, quickly degenerate into a play on words, substituting predictable lyrics with shocking ones that derisively demonstrate how bland and banal the Orbison song seems to them, end of quote.
How dare you.
Judge Nelson came to the same conclusion that the Two Live Crew song was clearly intended to ridicule the white bread original and reminds us that sexual congress with nameless streetwalkers is not necessarily the stuff of romance and not necessarily without its consequences. The court actually goes through and tries to ascertain, right? The threshold question when fair use is raised in a defensive parody is whether a parodic character may reasonably be perceived. Whether going beyond that parody is in good taste or bad does not and should not matter to fair use, which is the whole point of going through this. So the question really is how, number one, is there a connection to an element that you are parodying? And then what kind of work are you doing in connection with that parody? The more the work, the more that that's entitled to be sort of fair use under copyright. And all of this, again, you know, as I pointed out at the outset, is non-statutory, right? This is interpreting the spirit of the First Amendment as constraining the written black and white rules of copyright law, even though that's a federal statute. Mm-hmm. So the court contains as Appendix B, you don't even have to Google it, the Appendix B to Opinion of the Court, Pretty Woman as recorded by the Two Live Crew. So if you ever want to experience that one again, you can absolutely read it.
Controversial take here. I'm going to lose all our listeners, but it's okay. You can just hate me. Remember, Andrew's the legal genius for the show and reason you listen anyway. I don't like parody songs. I think they shouldn't be allowed. I think you should have to pay. I don't think you should be able to take a classic cherished hit that the reason people enjoy it is, you know, combination of things, words, melody, chords, singing, all that. And just change a couple words and then you get to profit off of that entirely. I think if you're going to allow parody in my America, okay, it's not illegal or something, but you got to fork over like 50% of any proceeds you make on it. It's amazing to me that Weird Al can just take some art that someone else did, slap some lyrics that honestly aren't not that funny to it, and then just make whatever money off of that. Because people are still singing and headbanging, whatever they're doing, dancing along, listening in their car. They're still enjoying that original artistic product that someone made. It's just got a few new syllables added to it. Anyway, I just lost all our listeners.
Well, I think, no. I mean, you've lost me because Weird Al is a genius and I will not hear otherwise. But page 589 of the opinion, Justice Souter, I think, gives voice to the Thomas view here. He says, this is not, of course, to say that anyone who calls himself a parodist can skim the cream and get away scot-free.
Yeah.
In parody, as in news reporting, context is everything. And the question of fairness asks what else the parodist did besides go to the heart of the original. It is significant that Two Live Crew not only copied the first line of the original, but thereafter departed markedly from the Orbison lyrics for its own ends. Two Live Crew not only copied the bass riff and repeated it, but also produced otherwise distinctive sounds, interposing scraper noise, overlaying the music with solos in different keys. I have no idea what the hell that is. And altering the drum beat. This is not a case, then, where a substantial portion of the parody itself is composed of a verbatim copying of the original. It is not, a case where the parody is so insubstantial as compared to the copying that the third factor must be resolved as a matter of law against the parodists.
Interesting.
So, you know, the Supreme Court has given some voice to that.
Okay.
And I would certainly agree, like, some of the very earliest, like, Weird Al stuff that he did on Dr. Demento, right? You know, with doing My Bologna for My Sharona. Okay, fine, right? Like, you could see that might fall under the suitor exception here.
I mean, there are Weird Al songs where you don't know if it's the Weird Al version or the normal version for a while. You know, like, it could be either of them for some part of the song. Am I wrong?
Agree to disagree.
No, that wasn't an insult.
Some of his early stuff.
Yeah, like he copies it so well that you don't know which one it is for a while, is all I'm saying. That was an insult to him.
So is there any, we've gone through now and talked about parody. We're going to wrap this segment up. The only argument that I could see here with respect to the baseball team as scratching my head as to why Andrew Schwartz doesn't just
call it, for the love of God.
Yeah, call it a bad day and go home.
Yeah.
Is that the Hustler and the Campbell cases assume, for the purposes of argument, that you are parodying a public figure. And they use, in fact, repeated citations in Hustler versus Falwell to the New York Times v. Sullivan standard. And you could argue, and almost all of the parody cases are based on public figures, right? There's not a lot of case law on this because usually the people you're parodying have to be well known, right, for it to be funny, right? Because why would you parody, you know? Yeah. So there isn't a lot of law on this. Mm. You could argue, I guess, that the core of the reasoning set forth in Hustler versus Falwell has to do with the New York Times v. Sullivan standard here. And here, you know, this is just an anonymous baseball team and, you know, we don't deserve it. That's the best argument I can come up with. I do not think that argument would fare very well in the courts. I think the underlying principles are not a function of the notoriety of the parody. But I do, you know, we always try when we go through, particularly when we're having a good laugh, to see if there's an argument on the other side. And that's the best that I could come up with. Still don't think it's great.
Nah, it's terrible. Yeah, cut your losses. I mean, come on, if you can't write a parody article, right? I mean,
yeah.
What country are we living in? I mean, that doesn't work anymore because people are having to drive hundreds of miles to try to get basic medical care. So maybe that argument doesn't work as well, but I mean, the First Amendment still kind of exists, right?
Still a thing. Yeah. Still a real thing. So, okay. Yeah.
This show is brought to you by Cuts Clothing. And Cuts is all about what they call the sport of business, which is all about versatility. This is what I love about Cuts Clothing. Their shirts, polos, hoodies, and crew sweatshirts are made for someone who loves to work hard, play hard, and never settles for less. And they're built for performance anywhere. That could be in the boardroom or in the gym. That's super cool to have clothing that can do either of those things. So you may not need a change after work to go to the gym because Cuts Clothing keeps you sharp wherever the game takes you. So in 2016, Cuts founder Steve Borelli set out to create clothes ready for every occasion the modern man faces. He started by reinventing the t-shirt. The end result, what GQ magazine calls the only shirt worth wearing, the signature buttery soft Pika Pro Tri-Blend Tee. It's a bold new take on a classic design, combining the ultimate blend of high-quality cotton, polyester, and spandex. But that's not all they have. You can also try, this is my personal favorite, the Pika Polo. It's a design that keeps you fitted for the office, the golf course, home, the gym, or your next date. It can do all those things. That's what I like because I play a bit of golf. So being able to have a polo that looks good and feels good both for the golf course, but also just for hanging around. It can be, it's anywhere. It's not one of those old crusty looking dad ones from the 90s. It's a polo shirt that actually looks good in all those different settings. So this is not just a lifestyle. It's not just a clothing. It's office leisure apparel for the sport of business. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/opening. That's cutsclothing.com/opening for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing. This show is brought to you by Gainful. There's nothing more personal than your health. So when it comes to finding the right protein powder to meet your fitness goals, you need a personal approach. Thankfully, now there's Gainful, the personalized nutrition system that formulates protein for your body and goals. Gainful gives you the peace of mind that your protein contains the finest ingredients specifically for you. So I took the 5-minute Gainful quiz, which you should do too, and they'll ask you some questions to support your whole body health, your individual fitness goals or your ever-evolving needs. And one thing that I answered was that I wanted a vegan protein, and also I don't like the whey protein. That's and it's not vegan anyway, but that's kind of why I don't like it, because I find whey protein disagrees with me a little bit. It's stuff like that. It's getting that personalized approach for you that makes Gainful so effective. Gainful personalized protein is formulated with simple and effective ingredients that work to achieve a wide range of fitness goals, from weight loss to muscle building. Gainful delivers your personalized protein as often as needed. You can cancel anytime or adapt your plan as needed. Gainful personalized protein arrives unflavored, so you can switch back and forth between 8 delicious flavor boosts like chocolate, peanut butter, Madagascar vanilla, or strawberry cream. Gainful's rigorous quality control process ensures that your supplements only have clean ingredients you can pronounce, along with zero artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Start your personalized fitness journey today with Gainful. To get $20 off your personalized protein, go to gainful.com/opening. That's gainful.com/opening for $20 off. Gainful, personalized nutrition made for your tastes.
Wildcard! Yeah!
Hey, wild card, B-words.
Woo!
Wild card. All right. You've left time. Wow. Your time management, Andrew. You're really on top of it these last few episodes. I'm so impressed. What's our wild card?
Our wild card is about continuing to keep the pressure on these idiots, dimwits, and insurrectionists who are being allowed back into proper society. And the only way to make sure people don't forget, these people participated in an armed insurrection at the Capitol to try and overthrow a democratic election, is by speaking out when people try and normalize that. So let's start off with Sidney Powell, right? Yeah. Sidney Powell, having fresh off sanctions from the Michigan court and Judge Parker, was already at it again. This is Hill Reporter noting that she went on some right-wing dipshit show and claimed the day before the California recall vote that, they're going to lose because, of course, they're stealing all the recall votes.
Yeah, definitely.
She said, quote, 70% of voters in one California county showed up to the polls only to be told they'd already voted. That is false. That is not true so in stupid. Any way whatsoever. The Hill Reporter noted that she couched the claim in cautious terms, saying that the claim, for which she offers absolutely no evidence whatsoever, is what someone else told her. Not naming the source or giving any information that would verify how reliable that source is. She didn't even name the county in which she alleged that it happened, and then finished with, if somebody ever investigates this fraud, that election fraud will continue to be rampant until voter ID is implemented, ballots are all paper, and the 2020 election is fixed. So,
voter ID would have prevented that.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because when somebody showed up to vote, they were like, you already voted. How did they know that?
Yeah, right. Having an ID would have proven that they hadn't already. I don't even know. I guess the idea is you couldn't have stolen it the first time.
Yeah, that first guy. They only ID the second attempt at a vote. This is stupid.
Yeah, it is terrible.
Can we say defamatory things about Sidney Powell by just saying that someone told me that?
Yeah, apparently that's the standard now is, you know, somebody told me Sidney Powell eats babies.
Told me. I'm not at fault.
I told you she is the worst lawyer I've ever seen. And we review bad lawyers for a living.
Yeah.
I'll stand by that one. I want to talk about some under the radar names, too. And this is an MSN piece that says that notes a couple of different folks. The first is Jeffrey Clark, who was hired as chief of litigation and director of strategy at the New Civil Liberties Alliance, a conservative/libertarian law firm that battles the administrative state and has former D.C. Circuit Judge Janice Rogers Brown on the board, noted libertarian law professors Randy Barnett and Eugene Volokh, right? The Volokh conspiracy. And despite the fact that Jeffrey Clark was an active participant, supported the January 6th insurrection, repeated Trump's baseless, ridiculous claims, none of them none of the members on the board of advisors of the New Civil Liberties Alliance spoke out about hiring this guy. This should be, when you try and overthrow the government, that should be a resume.
Maybe
killer.
Some social consequences, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. I know we're going to get called out as a, you know, cancel culture podcast.
Well, but, again, I not just the insurrectionists, also anti-vaxxers and people who say they aren't going to get the vaccine and the whatever. In my opinion, at the very least, some social pressure. Don't tiptoe around, your choice. No, it's definitely, okay, your choice to get a bunch of people killed. You know, like my kids who can't get vaccinated and, you know, people's grandparents and anybody else is immunocompromised. It's your choice to let those people die because you're too selfish to get the vaccine. Yeah, no, I don't want to respect your choice. We can, at the very least, put a little bit of social pressure on people like this. And insurrectionists, let's up that a notch. We can put quite a bit of pressure on insurrectionists, I think. That's some people are a little too polite, Andrew.
Yeah.
A little too tiptoe around the, that was one of the insurrections. That's okay. That's in the past.
Yeah. And that was
nearly 8 months ago, Andrew.
And there have been zero
ancient
consequences.
Insurrection history.
Right. Yeah. Somebody I'm really glad to see repeated anywhere but on opening arguments, we've talked about John Eastman, right? The racist birther piece of garbage who has argued that you do not have birthright citizenship on the basis of what are almost, you know, sovereign citizen level bad arguments, right? They are in bad faith and they are because he is a racist. He has never been kicked out of the Federalist Society. They did remove on their website the listing of him as the chair of the Federalist Society's practice group, Federalism and Separation of Powers, but they've never disciplined him or kicked him out or anything. Here's what he said on the internal Federalist Society listserv, right? So again, I just want to emphasize this. These are other lawyers. This is the pipeline to the federal judiciary, which was virtually all of Trump's nominees and an overwhelming supermajority of George W. Bush's nominees, right?
Oh, so it's Justin and Corey Net. It's the listserv.
It is the place where you would expect. This is not Reddit, is what I'm saying. So on the Federalist Society listserv, he said, quote, "We know there was fraud,
hey, Justin.
Traditional fraud."
Justin 1239 here. That's all their usernames.
But no fraud. Look, Eastman said in print, quote, "We know there was fraud, traditional fraud, because they put those ballots in a secret folder in the machine. They were unloading the ballots from that secret folder, and voila, we now have enough folks to get barely over the finish line. We saw that happen in real time last night." This was posted during the Georgia Senate runoff, 1-6, right? Yeah. And it happened on November 3rd as well. Eastman has also claimed that the January 6th insurrection was orchestrated by Antifa, because of course he did.
Sure.
Expressing those views should get you censured, should get you kicked out of polite society. It should not be appropriate to say, this is a conservative group.
Yeah.
It is repeating not just demonstrably false claims for which there is no evidence, but demonstrably false claims that got people killed. And if there isn't punishment for that, I just don't know.
Well, and that got lawyers, well, not yet, but hopefully disbarred, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
It's a lawyer thingy that you're talking about. You would think that expressing views that were like, this was so bad, these arguments were so unsupported and they were so sinister, that people are getting charged hundreds of thousands of dollars in sanctions punishment right now.
Yep. And so, look, I know we don't have any influence over the Federalist Society, but when we tell you being a member of the Federalist Society should be disqualifying for serving on the federal bench, this is what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. It is an organization that refuses to police, that dog whistles, that gives voice, that platforms ignorant racists peddling knowing untruths. And if I were a member of a group like that, look, there's a reason why we call out groups on the left that lie about stuff. There's a reason why we did an early episode on, hey, let's not start sending money to Michael Avenatti, and don't retweet Occupy Democrats, and don't support the Krasensteins. And look, it is important to police your own house. And if lawyers on the right are not policing the Federalist Society for embracing this abject garbage, then it's time for us to say that that organization is what it appears to be, a haven for Trump-supporting, truth-denying insurrectionists.
That's a note to go out on, I guess.
Sorry. No, we had a lot of fun in this episode, we got to do some good, too. So.
Yep, that's right. Yes, make insurrectionists face consequences again, please.
Yep.
Opening Arguments is brought to you by ExpressVPN. So we all have things we search for that perhaps you don't want other people to know about. For mine, that's mostly disgusting health-related things for either me or my children. You don't want people seeing those search results. Having kids is a wonderful adventure. I know most of you are probably thinking, why don't you just use incognito mode? Well, let me tell you something that you may or may not know. Incognito mode does not hide your activity. It doesn't matter what mode you use or how many times you clear your browsing history, your internet service provider can still see every single website you've ever visited. That's why, even when I'm at home, I never go online without using ExpressVPN. It doesn't matter who your internet service provider is, ISPs in the US can legally sell your information to ad companies. ExpressVPN is an app that reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your ISP can't see the sites you visit. ExpressVPN also keeps all of your information secure by encrypting 100% of your data with the most powerful encryption available. Most of the time, I don't even realize I have ExpressVPN on. It runs seamlessly in the background and is so easy to use. All you have to do is tap one button and you're protected. ExpressVPN is available on all your devices, phones, computers, even your smart TV. Yeah, these days, every friggin' thing is connected to the internet. I changed out my router the other day, as some of you may know, and I forgot how many things in my house use the internet, and it was a pain. But you can use ExpressVPN on all your devices. So protect your online activity today with a VPN rated number one by CNET. Visit our exclusive link, expressvpn.com/OA, and get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/OA. expressvpn.com/OA to learn more.
And thank you!
And now it's time to thank our Hall of Famers, our all-time greats, in the revised weekly shout-out where we cover a portion of our Hall of Famers each week to make sure we've covered everybody in the Hall of Fame once per month at least. So that's our new policy. I'm loving it. I'm having a great time. We still get to hear all the shout-outs, which we never want to get rid of them. But, you know, we get to space it out a little bit. I think it's best for everybody. I'm enjoying it. And I think it's your turn first, Andrew.
All right. Thank you, too. One more voter suppression bill, and I swear to God, I will pull this country over to Le Deux Lesbiennes Fabuleux, to Edgy Veggie, to Sassy Italy Tours. Doesn't know if touring is ever going to be a thing again, but we banned MTG just in case. Jennifer Chakowski, to D&D Minus Cameo, question mark, to We Have Legal Advice. If ye have coin, do not take legal advice from a coin. To Mutually Supported Communities Are Harder to Oppress, join or create a local mutual aid group. To The greatest science fiction series of all time is Doctor Who, and I'll take you all on one by one or in a bunch to back it up. Thomas, I have to confess to you, I have never seen so much as a single episode.
You're not missing much. No, sorry. Sorry, patron. I know who this is, and I love your passion for Doctor Who. I really do.
Evie Huntington, Harvard alum, no hood. I would also like to congratulate Angus the Corky. I watched him win in 2019 and cheered on his 2021 title defense. I love when corgis win things, so I'm with I enjoy mocking people who mispronounce adopted French words that mean a peculiar ability. I guess I am a fort teaser. Torsten Piot and a goat asks, wouldst thou like to live deliciously? Elect Thomas Smith, President, American Honky Tonk Bar Association. Support your local Peruvian restaurant. Alpha Kenny Body, Angry Macface. Penelope is glad Sydney got sanctioned for Terpsichore. The Books That Burn podcast, reviewing fictional depictions of trauma since 2019. Pre-pledging to the upcoming OA spinoff podcast, Andrew Reed's Sovereign Citizen Lawsuits. Yeah, you also have to be pledging to my therapy bills for that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Support AfricaPartnersMedical.org, providing volunteer U.S. MDs and RNs to bring the latest science to African MDs and RNs. this is not the greatest voting system in the world. No, this is just a plurality. April Poff, don't call me a mofo. I will have you know I'm an ex-mofo. I was a mofo for show, but I'm a mofo no mo. Murray Gregerson, over 50 laud-awful movies, and you still haven't done A Few Good Men. Yeah, that is on our list, but did you know that's like 3 hours long?
It's a long one. That's the main consideration.
Yeah.
We got to watch these things like 2 or 3 times.
I also have a great one that I'm going to tell Thomas as soon as this recording is over. So it will not be next month if I have anything to say about it. Looks like freedom's back on the menu, boys. Definitely take not Googling advice from any kind of doctor on a podcast. Thank you, Therese. Proud sponsor of Defense Against Any Crowd Health Lawsuit. You're so vain, you probably think this pleading is about you. Put your boss on a performance plan, pass the PRO Act, the patron names will continue until morale improves, and Jake, take it away, Thomas.
And thank you to Chris Waltrip, Seattle Pete. My employer evilly added an MBA clause after years of employment under threat of termination. Interesting. Christopher Brown, same cedar. spelled C-E-D-A-R. Philly Live Show 2022. I'll bring the cheesesteaks to the fully stocked basement bar for Platinum Night. Lawfulcopter says, Andrew and Thomas, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all that you do. OA Live Show in Sydney, Australia. Please, I won't be vaccinated until October at the earliest. Thanks, government. The Coin is rigging T3BE with Chinese thermostat controlled by an Italian satellite. Ruth's hubris got us here. Briars will seal our fate. Ooh. Crime or no criming, what if we tell them that ivermectin is an abort efficient? Yeah. Robert M., well, it may cause infertility in men, ivermectin. It might, depending on, you know, the study needs more studies. We covered it on SIO. The study that made headlines is actually 10 years old and is not that well done. So, but could. Anyway, Robert M., Canada has precedent saying Martians can't sue people in Ontario. I envy them. Lou, brevity, Nakomo Koska, famed soldier of fortune at your service. Black Canyon of the Gunnison Live Show. Polly Hernandez, these are just simple farmers, people of the land, the common clay of the New West. You know, morons. Emily Rainbow Spence, in times when freedom seems lost, great souls arise to reclaim it. 6-1-4+2 red to cast the deck box Halifax. I still think that must be flavor text. Times when freedom seems last. So it's 6-1-4+2 red. I don't know what that means. Is it a 6-1? Is it that red elemental that like comes out and just, you know, tramples and hastes right away? I don't know. Anyway, welcome back to the Hall of Fame. Oh, cool. Darth Mandypants, one fabulous book thrower, Jason Copus, Ian Hamilton, another Minneapolitan waiting for our live show in Minneapolis. Hey, Arizona, support Aaron Lieberman for governor. Spent my charity budget for the year. Need help. Help. Need everyone to roast the coin on Vulgarity for Charity. Metagon 7. Pins, beans, now shorter for your benefit. Stop calling him Uncle Frank. Nate Drex has to call him Dad. Knock, knock. Who's there? HIPAA. HIPAA who? I can't tell you. And that's it. Thanks so much, Hall of Famers.
And also, special thank you every episode to Conrad Michaels.
True. Actually, I was going to do the top 10. Good reminder. Oh. I can. Adam Costa. Oh, if we do 11, it includes Eli. But I feel like, you know, it's like the 65 speed limit that you've talked about. You know, it's on the number. Sorry, Eli. Adam Costa, Teresa, David in Brooklyn, Sam Danow, Mitchell. We all know Aaron has a spider tulpa. Michael Rops. I agree with that 100%. Sam Buck and Conrad Michaels.
Sometimes you eat the bar and sometimes the bar while he eats you.
And now it's time for T3BE, and I know I got it right because I didn't change my mind on the answer. So it should be just formality here, just a quick Thomas got it right. Here we go.
I want to bracket for a second. This is an exceedingly difficult question, a deceptive question, but not for the reasons that we're about to talk about.
Oh.
So plaintiff sues a defendant in federal court for negligence after the defendant lost control of his car and collided with the plaintiff. The defendant has an insurance policy that will pay the defense of the claim, as well as most or all of the damages that the defendant is deemed liable for. Is that subject to discovery by the plaintiff? And the tricky part of the question is the phrase subject to discovery. You, I took that direct quote. You said it's, you were between C and D on the final answers, but you were between C, D, and A, kind of going into that before you decided to take the bold choice of it's a definite no. And I will tell you the correct answer is B.
I said at the last second there could be some, God, I almost feel like I was remembering something about that.
So let me explain. And I will tell you that this is a question that when I first read it, I can see how, particularly in this short limited time, I was like, oh yeah, well, it's probably D. Right. And I'm gonna explain that in a minute. And it is a tricky question because it is the distinction between what is permissible in discovery versus what is admissible at trial. So let's work backwards. The D answer that you included as an alternative that I think is the best attractive distractor that says insurance policies are precluded from being admitted into evidence if agency control or impeachment is not at issue.
Oh, yeah. Admitted into evidence. That's not even what we were talking about, right?
Yep, that's right. Okay. As admission into evidence is considered to violate public policy. That is a correct statement of Rule 411 of the Federal Rules of Evidence. And the reason for that, okay, is, and if you, as the second you think about this, it will become obvious. You do not want a plaintiff's attorney to be able to get up in closing arguments and say to the jury, like, yeah, I'm make sure this as big as you want.
Anyway. Yeah,
yeah, insurance like, company's going to pay. Yeah, when the hell does anybody here care? You know, stick it to Geico, right? So it is prohibited to introduce that into evidence. And you're like, oh, yeah, right. That makes total sense. So then the question is, can you discover it? Mm-hmm. And the answer is that yes, you can discover it. And the reason that you want to discover it is because in discovery, you want the plaintiff to know, is it worth my time to pursue this case or not, right? Am I going to get paid at the end of the day? And so then the question just becomes, do you have to ask for it or do they have to automatically turn it over? We amended the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure to say any insurance agreement under which an insurance business may be liable to satisfy all or part of a possible judgment in the action or to indemnify or reimburse for payments made to satisfy the judgment must be provided automatically without request from the plaintiff. So
that's funny. I did mention, I was like, you know, B could be right if there's some rule that you do just have to show insurance. And that's sure right. enough. That's what it was. Yeah.
And that's why you do it because it's a,
I didn't think about the fact. Okay. I did not think about the angle of like, you need the plaintiff to know whether they're wasting their time. I honestly, that just hadn't occurred to me. It's kind of cynical, I think, a little bit. You know, like you would, in a court of law, you would think it wouldn't be so much about like, hey, make sure the person knows whether or not there's going to be any money at the other end, otherwise it won't waste the time. You'd think it'd be more about like truth and, you know, whether or not the insurance policy has anything to do with someone being negligent or not. But nope. Pretty much just bottom brass tacks, you know, like, am I going to get paid here?
Yeah. And I think that's good to remind people, right? Like it is, hi Morgan. Like this is something that Morgan and I talk about that when you're a young associate, it's easy. It certainly was for me to sort of get caught up in what is the legally right answer. And a large part of the practice of law is sometimes being able to tell your client like, yeah, well, we absolutely have the right to sue here. It will take 3 years, cost you $100,000. And at the end of the day, you'll get $10,000.
Yeah. Well, but right? I've always thought of that as a practical consideration, not something that would actually be in the Federal Rules of Evidence. I just didn't think it would be like, yeah, Federal Rules of Evidence say, give them the insurance so they know if they're going to get paid or not. It's just interesting. It didn't occur to me.
So tough test. Even though the question was wrong, we all come out winners at the end.
No, I very clearly lost and didn't even second chance it. This was that was a tough one. I don't know that I had any chance of. That's a tough guess, you know, especially in a situation where I've just answered two incorrectly by switching my answer at the last second.
I know.
From the one that I kind of was intuitively thinking. So there was no chance I was getting this. All right. Well, let's find out if anyone was smarter than I am. If we have any lawyers listening, we do. There's always somebody who
we
gets
do.
The exact
there always
right
is.
Yep. Who's our big winner this time?
Well, Thomas, I want to tell you that a lot of people got this one wrong. Most people confidently picking D, making exactly the mistake that we talked about, right? That we just kind of went through with respect to admissibility versus discoverability. A handful of lawyers got B, but the person who came in first and I think is a non-lawyer is Chad H on Twitter, who writes, "My guess is B, with A as the second chance, reasoning, mumble, mumble, subrogation, mumble, mumble." Well, the reasoning isn't great, but the guess is great. And since this was an exceptionally hard one, we're going to take mumble, mumble, subrogation, mumble, mumble. And congratulations to Chad H. for winning this week's T3BE. Everyone, let's give them a follow. They are at Agent C 1983, A-G-E-N-T C-1983 on Twitter. Congratulations, Chad H., on being this week's winner.
And that's our show. Thanks so much for listening. We love you so much. Delightful, delightful OnlyFans topic today. Boy, how about that Tulsa Torch? That's a talented publication. I got to say, I'm impressed. Usually, you know, when you see like the minor league Onion clones on, right, online, yeah, you're like, all right.
Yeah.
You know, not great. But this one, man, that is top-notch work. Well done. All right. We'll see you folks next time.
Until then,
I move for a bad court thingy.
You mean a mistrial?
Yeah, that's why you're the judge and I'm the law talking guy.
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it will be a big help if you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use, and be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/yodelmountain and follow us on Twitter at openargs. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. It is produced with the assistance of transcriptionist Heather Loveridge, production assistant Ashley Smith, and additional contributions from Morgan Stringer and Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our live shows and heads up the OA Wiki. Follow at OA Wiki on Twitter. Additional thanks to the moderators of the Opening Arguments Facebook community: Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian Ziegenhagen, and Teresa. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith, who edits the show and created the fabulous theme music, which was used with permission.